For though I read at least 100 books a year and often twice that number, I always end up on New Year's Eve feeling that I have accomplished nothing. I read books, mostly fiction, for at least 2 hours a day, but I also spend 2 hours a day reading newspapers and magazines, gathering material for my work. This is not me writing, by the way, this is this person, which largely consists of ridiculing nincompoops and scoundrels. I read books on all the obvious places, in my house and in my office, and on trains and buses and on planes and in public parks and in private gardens. But I've also have read them at plays and concerts and prize fights, and not only during intermission. I have read books while waiting for friends to get sprung from the drunk tank, while waiting to have my meniscus repaired, while waiting for people to emerge from comas. On more than one occasion, I have buried my face in a book to take my mind off the low life at the other end of the subway car in which I was inexplicably traveling at midnight alone. I always carry a book I can page through while in line at the supermarket or during jury selection or at the wakes of people I barely know and do not much care for. I read anywhere and everywhere. In high school, I used to prop up a copy against the back of the youth who sat directly in front of me in delight in spine-tingling adventures while the teacher was rattling on about the ablative case or the genetic fallacy or photosynthesis. During my summer vacations in college, I worked the graveyard shift in a bubblegum factory where I would volunteer to climb up into an overhead funnel and scour it, which the older, fatter, full-time employees were loath to do. Some of them feared heights, all of them feared ladders. Once ensconced in my stainless steel crow's nest, whose filth or cleanliness no one down below was in any position to verify, I would stir up a bit of a ruckus every so often, creating the impression that I was getting on with the house cleaning job and then settle in amidst the sugar and debris and read F. Scott Fitzgerald all night. How many like stories? You like reading? Good. And we brought a book in case the class was boring. Good. Good for you. You may as well. Well, we'll try to keep it interesting enough. So what do you want from the class? Do you have an expectation that you were... just came to see what happens to you? That's all right. Okay, we can do that. Okay, get to know how to get students to read. That's a very good question. If I knew, I would tell you. It's tough to get students to read well.
To write like that.
Some students have an attitude about literature in general, studying and reading and things like that. How do you break through to a student that thinks that literature is just so boring, you work so hard and you get nothing out of it? How do you...
I said we'll follow that outline loosely. What's one of the problems when you got someone that just despises literature?
Seems like often a prejudice.
Prejudice? They didn't want to learn to like it?
Or that's told them that it was part of it.
That's tough.
Part of the lack of visualization, too, they don't find it real.
It's words. It's a jumble. Have a first grader sound stuff out until they get to the period they have no idea who made Sam sitting in the sun or whatever you've got. All they got is the last word. And then that applies to any age. Eventually they can't visualize it. And maybe I'll repeat myself because I like to discuss things as we go too. But I did something which changed everything for a long time. We were studying the Revolutionary War. And on a whim, just to make sure we get some answers, to kind of wake up, so who won? And this one boy goes, we studied a whole chapter on the Revolutionary War, and he couldn't. Now, what was it? Who did win? I stopped assuming that they understood things. Now, that's a rare case. I think he was having a sleepy day. I felt awful. It still kind of bothers me. Maybe you can tell. I feel bad that I didn't do a better job. I'd like to think it wasn't all my fault either, but still. Anyway. Sometimes you have, the teachers, we like to fuss about the home because, well, we can't do anything about it, so we can complain about it all day, right? So at the beginning of the year, often I hand out this little survey, and I'll say, how many books did you read this summer, and what is a book you enjoyed recently? That's really interesting, by the way. Not just to kind of check up on home. You're not doing it for that because you can't do anything about it anyway, right? But it's really interesting. There's girls that have verified. They knew I do this, so about the second time around, they write down, like one girl wrote, I actually kept track because she didn't think I'd believe her. Wrote it like 90 books or something. Now, I don't know how thin they were. I didn't check up on that. Like 60 to 90. Some of these girls, I don't know what they do all the summer. I guess read. One boy wrote, he read one book. Okay, Yehuba's is like Martyr's Mirror size or something. But, what's a book you enjoyed recently? Field and Stream. That boy have a hard time in literature class? I didn't check his grades, but I think he probably did. Field and Stream, by the way, is not a book. It doesn't count. Also like to write, what country would you like to visit? And they say things like South America. So that's okay. We all make mistakes. All right, well, I want to get to some of these things. And I really like your participation. It's by the third day, we're going to be going for recess early if you don't help out. So if you have a question on something, I'd like to hear it. And I like ideas. And you'll notice one of the last questions about the other side. What are your favorite stories? I like to read good stories. So I like all kinds of book recommendations and short stories. I like a good stack of short stories to read to students. Just to kind of fill in little times, that's always very good. So I'd like your recommendations on that. It would be nice if we could do like a book study here, but that's obviously not going to work. So we're going to take some chunks out of some books, and I think it'll be familiar enough and self-explanatory enough it won't be confusing, and a lot of short stories. So it's going to, this discussion will probably skew towards the side of the literature genre of short stories, just by sheer necessity, unless you all agree to run out in the bookstore and read a book tonight, and then we discuss it tomorrow, which is not probably practical. So what is it? Well, first of all, how do you say the word? How many syllables does it have in this class you're in?
Literature?
It's a four-syllable word, by the way. How many say it that way? Good for you. Thank you. Someone advised I repeat it to myself. It's a four-syllable word. Lots of people say literature, and it's not. Sorry, I get kind of OCD about these things. But what is it? That's okay, literature. I'll try to work on it. You can correct me. I have a deal with my students. They may correct my language and pronunciation if they do it kindly, and then, of course, I return the favor. So you can try to correct those things because we all want to learn, right? So what is this stuff? Simple definitions are complex. Don't have to show off to anybody. We're so what is this? What are some ways to explain this stuff?
Stories.
Writing in general. Yes.
Including poetry.
Poetry. I'm sorry. Maybe you were dying to have a whole class on that word. I don't know. I ran out. I have another folder just in case we have more time. And we're not going to cover everything, but yes, it is. It definitely does include poetry. Well, writing includes everything, right? Here's some dictionary definitions, if you like. It tends to seem, from what I can, you know, what I gather. So my thought was, well, what do people think of when they think of literature? They don't think of, well, your student's going to think of a book, right? That's fine, whatever, because you have that kind of class. But it's not necessarily just this book or just this class. And I want to talk about that. I think that's somewhere in your thing. So how does it literature throughout the curriculum? I think it applies to a lot of things actually, and the more I thought about it, the more I decided maybe this is the most important thing in the whole class, right? I mean the whole curriculum in some ways. It's like the man that said, here's a story, right? You count, I was gonna count today how many stories we heard so far. And I forgot because it's too interesting. You don't sit there. You don't just keep counting, right? But stories are such a huge part. A man said So I was thinking, you know, this is maybe the most important thing. But a man said he always thought his brain is the most important part of his body. But then he realized who was telling him that. Okay. So maybe this is the most important. Maybe it's not. But anyway, it's a body of written works. It tends to be used to describe a certain category. So it might be French literature, you know, and you got this. It tends to be used in those ways sometimes. Another definition is imaginative or creative writing, especially of artistic value, something that has artistic value to it. Did you ever read students' work and you just knew they were not going to be a famous writer, at least for a good while, right? There's no artistic value to it. And you can read some textbooks not bashing the textbook, but there's lots of math paragraphs that they're good, they're valuable, they explain it, but there's not artistic value in and of itself, maybe. Now, I think as much as possible, we should try to put the two together and see what we can take away. And I think that's what really can make boring stuff interesting. Someone said he pulled out one time directions to fix some drain in his sink. And he said it was fun to read all of the stuff, and it explained it, and it made literature in fixing your drain. Oh, that's a... But you know what? He talked about it. And that was a whole year ago. Sometime I had heard about it, and now I'm telling you, that thing stuck. It carries, and so good writing carries things along. So anything of artistic value, don't get too carried away. There's all kinds of evil artistically portrayed, and highly interesting. There's some really thrilling stories that you are not gonna, for sure. Maybe let's say read to your students. There's by the way, some literature books have Edgar Allan Poe in. Don't go recommend all that stuff. That's keep you awake day and night. Anyway, so maybe there's some artistic value and lots of non-artistic value, although maybe it's artistic. Anyway, but there's got to be value. We'll get to that. Any printed material, perhaps. And I like the definition of just plain good writing. Good writing. That's what I would like to go with. Okay, so what makes it good or what makes it not good? Well, some of that is opinion, but we'll get to some of that later. Okay, so you got this little thing called the story evaluation sheet. This is what I'm going to use. This is what I use at school pretty regularly on stories for the older grades 9 and 10. And so what I'm going to do here is we're going to talk about this thing and why and what it's for. So, why do you have them write down the story title, things like that. And then we'll come back and I've got a story on attempted murder. Yeah, you may read stories about attempted murder to your students. Just wait, I'll read one to you. It involves robbery, and a huge part of it is racism. So I'll read that to you here once we're done evaluating this thing. And then we got another short story called Thank You, Ma'am. Okay, story title. Why? What's the point of having them write down the story title? I was told this is not a how to teach literature class, so we don't want to dwell on this forever, but what's the point?
To introduce the story in a brief way.
Okay, it gets a story started. And make sure your students read the title. How many times, let's see, should we talk about how you read a book? Let me just go back to the back side of it first. Anyway, make sure people are aware of it and think through it. What does it mean? What's it getting at? Oh, I see what's happening. And tomorrow, being in class, I want to read you a story where the beginning of the title sets you up for something that didn't actually happen. Oh, wait, no, I told you. Sorry, forget that. Okay, author. Because students aren't going to notice who the author is, probably. And maybe we're being too hard on some students, but do you? You go check who the author is every time before you read a story? It's easy just to pick it up and read it, because that's the whole point of it, right? This is the not quite as interesting part, maybe. So, what else should we should? So this we've got the author here. Why is it important to at least talk about the author? What can you do? What can you bring in with that? That's a huge part of what makes this work. And sometimes it's amazing what opens up when you start reading about this person. I want to read a little bit of Uncle Tom's Cabin. How many read that book, at least in part or most? Okay, so we're familiar with the book. I was hoping that would be Uncle Tom's Cabin. You at least have a general idea? How many read it word for word all the way through? Good for you if you did. How many went through this couple of good stories? But at least have an idea. Well, if you read and understand Harriet Beecher Stowe, there's some really interesting things. She lost, I think I'm kind of getting ahead of myself, but she lost a child at a young age. How many times does losing a child or almost losing a child drive the narrative? It's huge, especially when you get the senator and his wife and they had just lost a child and that's what kind of turned this whole thing. It's huge when you understand she actually did that. She understood what it's like to lose a child. And so little things like that are interesting. And cross it over, right? So here's this person. They also wrote this. What else did Harriet Beecher Stowe write that you sang? I forgot to check. She wrote Sure, that song, Zion's Praises, right?
I read a song. I can't remember which one.
Right. It's interesting. Does it change your life? Well, probably not, but is it interesting? Well, sure. Here's what she did. Okay, so those are things that a student and all of us might not tend to think about that hopefully you can point out, and you can point out some of the author's life. And you may as well be honest. This author sure wrote a good story, but then this happened, and or they used to think this at one point, all kinds of things like that. Now, who's the main character? So, of course, and I know don't feel bad. I'm not going to get hard on you because I understand a student that's supposed to fill this out can read and reread and go back over the story. And I'm going to read it to you once, and then we're going to talk about it. So, if we have to argue about who the main character is, which actually sometimes I think that's harder than it seems obvious, right? Everybody knows main character story. Not always. It's harder than it seems sometimes. But what is the main character of a story? How do you decide this?
Person that the conflict happens.
Okay, the conflict is happening to. Is it always the I?
No.
Absolutely not. And that's what can confuse people. Because often it is. If you see I, it's about always the main character, right? There's one in the perspective of the truth about Hayes and Kinch, right? I is not the main character, is he? No, because nothing happened to him. If a person goes through the story, and the first story I'm going to read about attempted murder, the person has to change, right, of some sort, or they have to learn something, or they, something has to happen to that person, or else it's a what? It's not a story. It's a
static.
Okay, that's true. That is true. It's a static character. So you say, this is a story, but nothing changed. You're writing a description, which are wonderful things to do, but now it's not a story with a conflict. Descriptions are great things, and they're good literature too. But if you're having a main character and this thing, you probably have some kind of change. They might fail. It might not end well. Hayes and Kinch, I believe, is screaming at the end, and then we go quietly up the hill, and it doesn't seem like it's ending so well. That's fine. I mean, that's just how it is. It doesn't. This whole thing that a main character has to go out to the woodshed and come back, and they're happier, and they. My children left. Okay, I don't know. I was not that way. My children. I don't know where that comes. I don't know where it comes from. But that. And sometimes students get this idea that that is a main character. They have to come out glorious in the end. That's not necessarily true. Secondary characters. Well, they're people. Are they? Are secondary characters always people? Well, then how do you decide? Students love to have fun with this, right? Well, this was driving, this. By the way, if you're wondering, we don't grade these almost never, if ever. So it's I think this cat was a secondary character. Well, no, the cat just walked past. Okay, you're getting a little carried away. Or yeah, that cat had a major part in the story. So yeah, sure, the cat's part of the secondary character. Okay, so there's three types of conflict: the main character versus another person, the main character versus his or herself, and the main character versus his or her circumstances. And okay, so you can say, well, actually, there's more types of conflict. Let's keep it simple. This one, I thought the first time I handed these out that this is easy, right? This is hard. It really is hard. Because every person has an internal struggle, right? Okay, so take some simple story where a person goes out there and someone else comes and does something mean to them. Is there no internal struggle? You're not a human being if you don't have a struggle. Now, maybe the problem is you and that other person, but really, you're going to have a struggle with whatever it is, right? So it always involves yourself, doesn't it? But is that really driving it? It is hard to... there's always some circumstances, right? There's no story without other circumstances influencing you. So everything involves circumstances. This one, it can be very tough. What's the main theme or lesson of the story? I explained this a little bit ago. Make sure it actually comes through. Make sure they actually get it. What is actually happening? And what can we get out of it? Now, can you get something out of every story? If you are having a literature class, I'm going to guess it's a story you can get something out of. Now, there are, in some literature books, there are descriptives where you learn about animals, you know, follow the life of an animal. That's a great story. And maybe there isn't a life lesson in how a owl escapes, you know, lives the life cycle of an owl. Maybe there isn't a great life lesson, but there might be. See what you can get out of it anyway. What's the character traits of the main character? What's this person like? And character traits are easy to see usually. It can be good or bad. And then notice the changes that comes through. How does the story resolve? It is, and again, I said this before, but it's amazing what we can miss sometimes, especially the first time through. It's not always obvious either. And this hopefully will help you and the students, and us as we discuss it, help to see things we didn't see before. I'll never forget one time we were discussing a story. I think it was that Robert Baker story about the seed of the scornful. Remember that one about these boys that misbehaved in church? And one child who was very thoughtful, and her mother was also very perceptive, raised her hand and said, "You know what? I don't think that's what's going on there. I don't want to ruin it for you, because now every time I read the story, I can't decide what actually is going on." He said, "The real lesson here is that old man is just crabby. That's the real problem." And this wasn't the student. The student assured me that, "Mom told me this." Students, when they do this, what are you going to do? Argue with their mom when their mom's not even there? It's tough. That's an interesting aspect to look at. Anyway, when you're discussing things like this, hopefully you can find out new things like that. The point of view, what are the points of view? Let's keep it the main simple, easy ones. There's all kinds of labels and terms. You can get a big, long string. But the main points of view are first, second, and all-knowing. First person involves what? And you might have to remind your students of this a few times. They get confused. They think it's the first, second, third person, and then second, and that it doesn't match up with English, right? First person is
I.
So I am telling the story. We said it's not always the main character, but when there's an I this, and I see this, and it, you know, basically you are the person watching this happening or having happened to you. Second person is what? I'm sorry, third person.
It's written.
You're basically a reporter following this person around, right? And he did this, and then she did this over here, and then we went over here. Right, that kind of thing, right? That's third person. All-knowing or omniscient, it's called, it's what? It's as if...
they can bounce around from person to person.
All right, you can go anywhere. You can even look inside their heads, which is what we all wish we could do, right? You can jump between people. Hold on, okay. You can see what this person is doing over here and 20 miles away. You can see it leading up. It's like the picture of the man with a big bunch of helium balloons walking around the corner and the person walking around the other side with a big cactus, right? You can see that. You can see things coming together. That's the omniscient or all-knowing point of view. And the next one, what were your feelings toward the main character or main idea? This one I like to hear, and especially when it changes. You're frustrated with this person. It's fun to talk about that. And it's really interesting because you can get students to say that this person had a major problem in it, and it's annoying to all around them. But it's the same things you see them do, or we all see yourself do, right? It helps us to be able to identify them. And that's one value of literature. You can see other people doing things, and it's a way of teaching other people without hitting them with a 2x4 on it. Time period and where the story took place helps us explain why things are happening. Doesn't make sense why this happened this way. Well, it's 1843, and so therefore, of course, they didn't have, you know, whatever happens. The next one I like, I think it's just kind of fun. What did you learn about how the people live that seemed strange to us? What did they do that just didn't make, you know, just never heard of this before? And it helps them to observe those things. Next one I added, I'm going to add it this year, I didn't have it on before, about words that you don't understand, then look them up and just increase the vocabulary. How many of you read with a dictionary at your side like your about third grade teacher told you to? I don't as much. Oh, well, we understand the context. Well, sure you do. That's fine. But make sure you actually understand the context. Another one I want to, for the second story we're going to read, because the first one's really short and the second one's pretty short too. There's a word used incorrectly. See if you can catch it. There's no dictionary that's going to let you use that word. But it's beautiful. It works. It fits. Don't give students any permission to go get carried away with breaking rules. One English professor told her students that you may only break the rules once you prove to me that you know the rules. And that's not good advice. Biblical truth, the story portrays, that's the same as the theme, basically. But often, you know, what's a phrase from the Bible verse that applies to this one? And it can be more than one. All right, so I said, let me find the story here. We're going to read a story on attempted murder, robbery, and racism. And you don't have to fill these out. I put one on either side. That way you've got a couple if you do scribble on them. And I know we're just reading it, and we're not going to give you a chance to read over and analyze it. So we'll kind of do that in class here amongst us. So you'll want to make sure you take notice of these things, and we'll talk about it as we go. Here it comes. A very excellent piece of literature, I might add. A certain man went down from Jerusalem to Jericho and fell among thieves, which stripped him of his raiment and wounded him and departed, leaving him half dead. And by chance there came down a certain priest that way. When he saw him, he passed by on the other side. And likewise a Levite, when he was at the place, came, looked on him, and passed by on the other side. But a certain Samaritan, as he journeyed, came where he was. And when he saw him, he had compassion on him, and went to him, and bound up his wounds, pouring in oil and wine, and set him on his own beast, and brought him to an inn, and took care of him. And on the morrow, when he departed, he took out 2 pence, and gave them to the host, and said unto him, take care of him, and whatsoever thou spendest more when I come again, I will repay thee. Story title. Right. We didn't read it, obviously, but sure. Parable of the Good Samaritan. Author.
Jesus.
Jesus is the author of that. Oh, by the way, is this a parable?
Story.
Did it happen?
No, it could have. It tells it like it did.
Who did it happen to?
The Jewish.
Jesus. Did it? Okay, we're going to stop there. I have no idea. Why didn't it?
Was Jesus a Samaritan?
Well, the person that came was a Samaritan.
No, the man.
But the man that was robbed. That's what I meant. That's the Samaritan obviously wasn't Jesus. The man that robbed, was that Jesus?
Doesn't say.
I don't know. But anyway, just random thought. Who's the main character? But he didn't change, see? he was constant. Or was he?
Can there be two main characters? But he faced the conflict.
He faced the conflict, and he had a chance to go right or wrong. So I agree with that. What else? So we'll accept that.
You expect him to do something different.
You thought he was going to do something different, but he didn't. So he did face the conflict, right? Sure he did. Who else is the main character?
The traveler.
He had something happen to him. Did he have to choose, though? That was a conflict with the circumstances. Well, we don't know if he did, though.
The story focuses on the Samaritan and not so much on the traveler.
The traveler is kind of blank. If you're right, he's unemotional. We don't know stuff. Well, we don't know the post.
He's mostly part of the conflict.
You're the main character there, right? Mm-hmm. It's you. It's me, right? Isn't that what's going on? So you know the rest of the story, right? It's all about, okay, so who's my neighbor? And you know this, you know, kind of try to pass off. Who's your neighbor? And you wouldn't even say. He said, the man that helped, right? Well, that's what you're supposed to do, right? So we're the main. Okay. I agree. This story, to analyze it with this, she is looking, but I think it, you know, it's a good type of conflict. Well, we don't need. Oh, secondary characters. Whoever wasn't the main character, right? If it's the thieves, the priest, the Levite,
the
innkeeper,
the donkey.
The donkey. Was he? He did his job. I like when we come up with all kinds of. Things like that. It's kind of fun because what it does is, okay, so, well, you know, we can sit here and argue if the donkey was the main character and all this stuff, but what it's forcing us all to do is analyze what's all the pieces of the story. And so I agree, technically, probably the donkey isn't the isn't a secondary character or even a minor, you know. I tend to list secondary with all the other ones. I, you know, don't divide it out to all these other names, but I like to when we can come up with some of those things. It analyzes who were, maybe we should have in the who are the other players in the story. And they don't keep played apart. Type of conflict. Well, we don't even know who the main character is yet. So, if it's you, it is. So if I am the main character, you're the main character. It's a conflict versus
himself.
Yourself. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Another person.
Mm-hmm.
Circumstances facing people that are damaged and beaten.
It is good for circumstances, but responsibility. Me versus responsibility.
Where's the battle?
You were saying that we are the main character, because mm-hmm. we need to choose who is really our neighbor. So in that case, it has to be with his or herself, not.
So we're choosing: do I help this person or don't I?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I would tend to agree with that, but see here, like I said, it is really hard to say. Got to be this one. At least I find it hard to. Maybe we're allowing too much, but this one I would definitely agree with yourself. But what makes it difficult sometimes to come down and say, absolutely, no way, can't be anything but this letter, is that there are circumstances play such a huge part, and other people play such a huge part in some cases. Theme of the lesson, main lesson, main theme or lesson.
Help your neighbor,
love your neighbor. Character traits. If it's you, that's a little difficult. Most stories aren't. How does story resolve?
Man
was helped. The choice was made to do the right. But see here, you're still making this choice. That's why I agree. This story is a little hard to put into this mold. A lot of stories are easier than this one, but because this is such a huge, it's just such a huge basket, it covers so much that it's really difficult to narrow it down to specific points. But I think there's still value in discussing it. Point of view?
Third
person. There's no eyes, right? It doesn't appear to be omniscient because not jumping around. Oh, is it? No, it stays with the thief, right? Now, generally, the point of view does stay with the main character, but again, this is a little different. Time period. Bible times, is that as close as you can get? For sure.
Jesus time,
probably. It's some stories you can't say. You got to get what you can.
2019.
Oh, well, you said the main character is you, so it has to be within your life. You were alive in Jesus time. Right. Again, I'll admit this is I think it's interesting to discuss, but
it could be any time up to the point where it was told.
That's true. See, it doesn't have to be in Jesus' time even, right? If you and where?
Between Jerusalem and Jericho.
Between Jerusalem and Jericho, somewhere. That's probably as close as we'll get. What'd you learn about other people live that seems strange to us? Now, again, you've been around the story so long it doesn't seem strange to you, but comparing this story with our current lives.
These donkeys to travel.
Traveling with donkeys?
Pouring oil and wine.
Think no one travels with donkeys? Yeah, of course. Okay. Pouring in oil and wine is a healing method.
The innkeeper actually took care of the guy.
Taking a sick person to the innkeeper? I've not found innkeepers to be always that helpful. I've tested a few out the last couple of days and they're nice, but not necessarily people I'd go to if I was gotten beaten up. Right? Anything else?
The priest just looking the other way.
Looking the other way. That is, we'd never do that, right?
To our point of view, that in some ways that sounds strange, to just look the other way or something.
This is where it Bible stories, lots of stories are excellent. We say, oh, that's awful. Oh, that's what I just did, right? Isn't that one of the beauty of stories? I want to talk about that more later, too. If there's any words you didn't understand, look them up. Well, this is Bible. You've been reading this, so you should understand the words, right? Or are there any strange words that a student should look up, maybe? There's one thing they got to know. And they might be a little weak on. One word.
Samaritan.
Who is a Samaritan and what's the big deal? Right?
Mm-hmm.
So, it was, let's say, a state. So, see, Washington's north of here, right? Samaritan's north of Jerusalem, right? And so here's someone on their donkey that gets hurt, and someone from Washington helps them out. That's amazing. What? Why are Washington, you know, why are we, why can't people from Washington help? If that's how the student's looking at it, someone from a state north of us helped us? Not such a big deal. What's, why all the fuss, right? Well, when you understand Samaritans and Jews, oh, I see, that's really a huge deal. And that's why Jesus told the story this way, and that's why it happened this way. Biblical truths, well, obviously it's a Bible story, and we covered a lot of that. All right, here's another one. And I'm going to start out with what comes after the story, and that is the author's bio, just about the author. The author, by the way, I have to tell you, since you can't read it, you're just listening, is Langston Hughes, Langston Hughes. He was one of America's greatest African-American writers, it points out, and that's good, interesting to know. He lived with his grandmother when he was young. Keep that in your mind, too. They were very poor. Also remember that. And he was in second grade when he began writing. He was 13 years old. He was elected the class poet. Okay? Elected the class poet. And this is what he wrote. The day I was elected, I went home and wondered what I should write. It had never occurred to me to be a poet before. What does that tell you about their classroom? The class poet had never written any poetry before. Either he was very popular and everyone just wanted to elect him to something, or they didn't have many poets, or something. I'm not sure what happened. Anyway, it never occurred to me to be a poet before, or indeed a writer of any kind. And then he did write poetry, and all kinds of songs and short stories, and here's one of them. It's called Thank You, Ma'am. She was a large woman with a large purse that had everything in it but a hammer and nails. It had a long strap, and she carried it slung across her shoulder. It was about 11 o'clock at night, dark, and she was walking alone, when a boy ran up behind her and tried to snatch her purse. The strap broke with a sudden single tug. The boy gave it from behind, but the boy's weight and the weight of the purse combined caused him to lose his balance, and instead of taking off full blast as he had hoped, the boy fell on his back on the sidewalk, and his legs flew up. The large woman simply turned around and kicked him right square in his blue jeans sitter. Then she reached down, picked the boy up by his shirt front, and shook him until his teeth rattled. After that, the woman said, "Pick up my purse, pick up my pocketbook, boy, and give it here." She still held him tightly, but she bent down enough to permit him to stoop and pick up her purse. Then she said, "Ain't you ashamed of yourself?" Firmly gripped by his shirt front, the boy said, "Yes'm." The woman said, "What'd you want to do it for?" The boy said, "I didn't aim to." She said, "You a lie." By that time, two or three people passed, stopped, turned to look, and some stood watching. "If I turn you loose, will you run?" asked the woman. "Yes'm," said the boy. "Then I won't turn you loose," said the woman. She did not release him. "Lady, I'm sorry," whispered the boy. "Your face is dirty. I've got a great mind to wash your face for you. Ain't you got nobody home to tell you to wash your face?" "No, ma'am," said the boy. "Then it will get washed this evening," said the large woman, starting up the street, dragging the frightened boy behind her. He looked as if he were 14 or 15, frail and willow wild, in tennis shoes and blue jeans. The woman said, "You ought to be my son. I would teach you right from wrong. Least I can do right now is wash your face. Are you hungry?" "No, ma'am," said the being dragged boy. "I just want you to turn me loose." "Was I bothering you when I turned that corner?" asked the woman. "No, ma'am." "But you put yourself in contact with me," said the woman. "If you think that contact is not going to last a while, you've got another thought coming. When I get through with you, sir, you're going to remember Mrs. Luella Bates Washington Jones." Sweat popped out on the boy's face, and he began to struggle. Mrs. Jones stopped, jerked him around in front of her, put a half Nelson about his neck, and continued to drag him up the street. When she got to her door, she dragged the boy inside, down the hall, and into a large kitchenette-furnished room at the rear of the house. She switched on the light and left the door open. The boy could hear other roomers laughing and talking in the large house. Some of their doors were open, too, so he knew that he and the woman were not alone. The woman still had him by the neck in the middle of the room. She said, "What is your name?" "Roger," answered the boy. "Then, Roger, you go to that sink and wash your face," said the woman, whereupon she turned him loose. At last, Roger looked at the door, looked at the woman, looked at the door, and went to the sink. "Let the water run till it gets warm," she said. "Here's a clean towel." "You going to take me to jail?" asked the boy, bending over the sink. "Not with that face. I would not take you nowhere," said the woman. "Here I am trying to get home to cook me a bite to eat, and you snatch my pocketbook. Maybe you ain't been to your supper either, late as it is, have you?" "There's nobody home at my house," said the boy. "Then we'll eat," said the woman. "I believe you're hungry, or been hungry, to try to snatch my pocketbook." "I want a pair of blue suede shoes," said the boy. "Well, you didn't have to snatch my pocketbook to get some suede shoes," said Mrs. Luella Bates Washington Jones. "You could have asked me." "Ma'am?" The water dripped from his face. The boy looked at her. There was a long pause, a very long pause. After he had dried his face and not knowing what else to do, dried it again, the boy turned around wondering what next. The door was open. He could make a dash for it down the hall. He could run, 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 run. The woman was sitting on the day bed. After a while, she said, "I were young once, and I wanted things I could not get." There was another long pause. The boy's mouth opened. Then he frowned, not knowing that he frowned. The woman said, "You thought I was going to say, but, didn't you? You thought I was going to say, but I didn't snatch people's pocketbooks." "Well, I wasn't going to say that." Pause. Silence. "I've done things, too, which I would not tell you, son. Neither tell God if he didn't already knew. Everybody's got something in common. So you sit down while I fix us something to eat. You might run that comb through your hair so you look presentable." In another corner of the room, behind his screen, was a gas plate and an ice box. Mrs. Jones got up and went behind the screen. The woman did not watch the boy to see if he was going to run now, nor did she watch her purse, which she left behind on her daybed. But the boy took care to sit on the far side of the room, away from the purse, where he thought she could easily see him out of the corner of her eye if she wanted to. He did not trust the woman not to trust him, and he did not want to be mistrusted now. "Do you need somebody to go to the store?" asked the boy. "Maybe to get some milk or something?" "Don't believe I do," said the woman, "unless you just want some sweet milk yourself. I was just going to make cocoa out of this canned milk I've got here." "That will be fine," said the boy. She heated some lima beans and ham that she had in the icebox, made the cocoa, and set the table. The woman did not ask the boy anything about where he lived, or his folks, or anything else that would embarrass him. Instead, as they ate, she told him about her job in a hotel beauty shop that stayed open late, what the work was like, and how all kinds of women came in and out, blondes, redheads, and Spanish. Then she cut him a half of her 10-cent cake. "Eat some more, son," she said. When they were finished eating, she got up and said, "Now here, take this $10 and buy yourself some blue suede shoes. And next time, do not make the mistake of latching onto my pocketbook nor anybody else's, because shoes got by devilish ways will burn your feet. I've got to get my rest now, but from here on in, son, I hope you will behave yourself." She led him down the hall to the front door and opened it. "Good night. Behave yourself, boy," she said. She looked out into the street as he went down the steps. The boy wanted to say something other than, "Thank you, ma'am," to Mrs. Luella Bates Washington Jones, but although his lips moved, he couldn't even say that as he turned at the foot of the barren stoop and looked up at the large woman in the door. Then she shut the door. Story title. Thank you, ma'am. When was that said?
Never.
He never did get around to saying, right? I don't want to get hard on anybody because I know you can only heard it once. But it says here that although his lips moved, he couldn't even say that, right? So the title, he never got around to saying what the title's about. Author? Langston Hughes. Do you know anything about him? Other than what we told you? I don't either. Main character?
Luella Bates Washington Jones.
And Roger. Okay, character singular now. Or is it both?
Roger.
Did Mrs. Luella Bates Washington Jones go through any crises? Yes, sort of. But did she learn anything? When did she quit? Oh, four. Okay, good. I'm going to go with Roger. You okay with that? He's the one that kind of came through something. Mrs. Luella Bates Washington was always this way. Well, except a long time ago, right? Okay, secondary characters. Okay, the large woman with a large name, right? What else? And with a large purse.
The other rumors in
the... Okay, the other rumors in the boarding house where she stayed.
Passers-by.
The other passers-by that... What did they do? They just stopped and watched. Does that tell you about a time frame? You start shaking somebody around on the street till their teeth rattled. And they might not just stop and watch you, right? Anyway, that's fine. Whatever. Go. What else?
The purse.
Oh, yes. Good. What about the nobody at home that was teaching him nothing? Is that a main character? Had a major part, the fact that no one was home. What about the woman, Mrs. Luella Bates Washington Jones used to be? All right, is that another character? Whatever. Let's not get too carried away. Conflict. Okay, there was a definitely... What type is it here? Which of the three types are we got?
Journal.
Is that what that is, external?
External.
Versus
another person. Or was it the circumstance that drove him to have conflict with another person? Okay, well, we're soon going to get told to stop, so we better keep moving. Theme, lesson. What is the lesson? Or is there one?
Something about love and trust. I don't quite know
what you're good.
Returning good for evil.
But see, that's dealing with the conflict. I agree with that. There definitely is a huge lesson in that. And that's why you don't want to get too narrowed down. Here's the one. There's definitely, in the returning good for evil, if she returned. All that tough talk, though, shaking him around. Was that good? I think it was still, though. But that, yeah, right. Exactly. So.
Ask and
you shall receive. What about more generally the chance? Don't steal pocketbooks. What about more generally the idea of redemption? This woman said, I used to do that, and you thought I was going to say, but I didn't. At least I used to be. I used to wish for things I couldn't have, but I didn't steal pocketbooks. She said, "That's what you thought I was going to say, but I didn't say that." And then she stops, basically indicating, "I actually did do some things I'm not." Well, she said, "I wouldn't tell you or God if He didn't already know." In other words, there are things we do not want to talk about here, right? And here she is trying to give this boy a boost.
That could be why she related and was so hard on him, because she saw this right in her own life when she was at that age.
And she apparently thought that was the way to handle someone at that stage.
Yeah.
And she should
really
know.
She really indicated herself by how she related to
him. Oh, I want to talk about some more stuff here, but anyway, can you remember all that? Hey, words you don't understand. What's they broke the English rules.
Yes, sir.
Ain't, well, she did that too, but there's a word you will not find anywhere in the dictionary. Ain't, you'll find the dictionary, although it says it's for a half Nelson. What is that?
A wrestler's grip.
A wrestler's grip, where you go under the arm and grab the neck. Is that right? That's what I read. I didn't know that before either. That gives you a picture of how he got down the street, under his arm and grabbed his neck.
Oh, wow.
Another one, a blue jeaned sitter. Blue jeaned is not an adjective. Nowhere. If you find a dictionary, let me know. Anyway. Right, we'll have to come back and maybe we can talk about more. Maybe you have all kinds of good opinions on some of those things. Thank you. Tomorrow I want to start out, I think tomorrow we'll start out with a little longer story, and it's called The Contents of a Dead Man's Pockets.